I thought we'd go over something that I did over weeks in Tavshin Nun Vav. So in a while, on the details of tshuva. Most, more or less, based on the Shari tshuva, but a lot more in depth and in what it covers. Okay, so we'll start with the Indian of tshuva. There's no real halachas yet, except for Chodesh Elul, which are not real detailed halachas, so we'll save the halachas, Mirz Hashem, for next week. Some of the halachas are ready for Tzlichas and Rosh Hashanah. And this week we'll spend on getting started with the mitzvah of tshuva. First of all, there is a she'ela in general whether tshuva is a mitzvah or not. A mitzvah to do tshuva, or if you don't want to do tshuva, you don't have to do tshuva. You just will suffer the consequences. So you did an aveira, and you'll be punished for it. And there are shitas that hold. The Rambam seems to say that the mitzvah is not tshuva. You're not mechuyev to do tshuva necessarily. But that's in one place in the Rambam. But if you do tshuva, then there's a way, proper way to do it, and you have to say vidui, it has to be verbalized, and we'll get to that, what it is. So Rambam seems to say that there is no chiyuv to do tshuva, but if you do it, you have to do it the right way, and then it's effective. Others, the Ramban and others, say that there's a mitzvah to do tshuva. It's one of the tariq mitzvahs to do tshuva. To what's it called, if you do an aveira, you have a chiyuv to repent. Okay, you just can't leave it the way that it is, just as much as you're not allowed to do something wrong. If you do something wrong, you have to correct it. And we'll see throughout later on, not this week, probably not next week either, we'll see that perhaps there's a different perspective of what this mitzvah is of tshuva. It's not just a matter that you're mechuyev to correct what you did wrong. That's a little bit different idea completely. The Rambam, on the other hand, says that Yom Kippur is the deadline. I hate to use that word in regards to Yom Kippur, but it's the kates. It's the end of the time that a person has to do tshuva for that year, which would seem to imply that you're mechuyev to do tshuva, that you have to do tshuva, and you have a whole year to do it. And by the time Yom Kippur comes, you have to do it. And if you don't do tshuva by the time Yom Kippur comes, then you're held responsible for not doing tshuva, not just for the original aveira. In fact, that's what they say, why it says that if a person is equal, mitzvahs and aveiras, right? Therefore, the Rambam says that a beinoni is a person who's equally balanced, mitzvahs and aveiras. So if by Yom Kippur comes, he does tshuva, then he pushes himself to the good side. If he doesn't, then he goes to the other side. So they ask, why does he have to do tshuva? All he has to do is one more mitzvah. Don't do any more aveiras. Do one more mitzvah, and you break the balance. So why does the Rambam say you have to do tshuva? One of the answers they give is that if you didn't do tshuva, then every aveira you did becomes a new aveira. Not only did you eat chazer, but you ate chazer and you didn't do tshuva. And by the time Yom Kippur comes, you're mechuyev to do tshuva. So now you have two sins. One, you ate chazer, and one, you didn't do tshuva for eating chazer. So it's not enough just to do one more mitzvah. But you're going to have to make sure you do tshuva, otherwise you'll have an abundance of other aveiras which will tip the scales the wrong way. So in any case,
even if it would not be a mitzvah, you could still say it to a person will be held accountable for not using the
opportunity. But that's not that if you know chiyuv to do tshuva and you want to just what's it called take the result the what's it called the repercussions. So that's then you're not really held responsible. That's a shaila. Are you mechuyev to do tshuva, or is tshuva an eitzah if you want to save yourself from onus? But if you don't want to save yourself, you're not mechuyev. So then you won't be held responsible. That's exactly the shaila.
I forget who it is, but Moshe was given someone who's a group of people were in a prison.
Yeah, that's the Shari Tshuva, but that again, the Shari Tshuva holds a mitzvah to do tshuva. But if you hold there's no mitzvah to do tshuva, right, you're not going to be held responsible for not doing it. You're a fool. Right? It's not even that Moshe doesn't say that he did something wrong, he's just a fool. Why in the world would you not want to save yourself from the punishment and from the bad repercussions? But it's not that you're mechuyev to do it, just that you're foolish if you don't do it. That's all. But the that's exactly the shaila. B'nai says, therefore, from these places in the Rambam, it seems there is a mitzvah to do tshuva. It's not just how you do it is the mitzvah, but there is a mitzvah to do tshuva, and that is pretty much the heskim of most rishonim, most achronim, both in the Rambam and in other Rishonim, that there is definitely a mitzvah. Shari Tshuva holds a mitzvah to do tshuva. The Ramban says there's a mitzvah to do tshuva. And the Rambam himself, even though he doesn't say it's a mitzvah to do tshuva, it's one of the Tariq mitzvahs, but it's a mitzvah that when you'll do tshuva to be misvada, but my Rosh Hashiva learns that means that there is a mitzvah to do tshuva, and this is the way to do it. It's all included in the same thing. So that's the first question. Is there a mitzvah or not? And it seems that even if there's not a mitzvah to do tshuva the whole year, but Yom Kippur, there's a special mitzvah to do tshuva. Yom Kippur, you're mechuyev to cleanse yourself of all your averas. The Shari Tshuva says that. And therefore, even if there's no mitzvah during the year of doing tshuva, on Yom Kippur there is a mitzvah to do tshuva. And again, later on, in a week or two, we'll understand better what that special mitzvah of tshuva is on Yom Kippur. Okay, the way we'll understand it now is just that really there's a mitzvah to do tshuva, and there's no time limit for it, but the deadline is Yom Kippur. If you don't do it by Yom Kippur, then you miss the chance. That doesn't mean you can't do tshuva after, but then you're going to be held responsible for having not done tshuva by Yom Kippur. And that goes according to basically the majority of opinions that say that there is some kind of mitzvah to do tshuva. It's not just an opportunity, it's a chiyuv. Okay. So now, let's go through, or start at least to go through, the stages of tshuva. So now, if in fact, according to most opinions, tshuva is a mitzvah, and even if it's not a mitzvah, but it's an opportunity, so how do you do it? Right? So the first shlav of tshuva is hakaras hachet. If you don't recognize that you did something wrong, it's impossible to do tshuva. Tshuva means that you strayed from the path and you're returning back to where you should have been to begin with. We believe, unlike the Christians, that everybody is created yosher. Elokim osas ha'adam yosher. Elokai neshama shenasato bi tahorahi. We are not created with sin and have to redeem ourselves or have somebody else redeem us. Right? We are created yosher, yeshorim, and tahorim, and unfortunately we stray from that path. And tshuva is returning to the original point. Okay, it's returning to where you should have been to begin with. So you can't return unless you realize that you've strayed. Because if you don't think you've done anything wrong, there's nothing to return to. You're there. So you can't possibly do tshuva if you don't recognize that you did a chet. So that is the first shlav of tshuva, hakaras hachet. That includes many different aspects. The first, simplest aspect. In order to have hakaras hachet, you have to know what a chet is. Right? You have to know what's wrong and what's right. Because if you don't know what's wrong and what's right, you can do a lot of things that are wrong and never realize it. Like we learned in the Mesillas Yesharim that the first idea of Torah Mediyah lead they all the midos, because you have to know enough Torah to know what's right and what's wrong, what you're responsible to do, what your tafkid in this world is. If you don't know any of that, then out of ignorance you may do a lot of things that are wrong and not realize it. Or think that you're doing things wrong and you really didn't do anything wrong. Right? I walked into a bookstore, I think it was here, not in America, and somebody walked in, they must have been very fresh balei tshuva. I mean, you know, raw balei tshuva. They weren't fresh, they were just raw balei tshuva. And the guy said, I'm looking for that light that you're allowed to turn on Shabbos. You know, those Shabbos lights. So the woman said that, you know, we have them or whatever. And he said, well, I don't understand, you know, how you could turn on a light on Shabbos. She said, well, you're not really turning it on. It's just that you revolve this thing and the light is always on and you're just uncovering the light. So the guy, right, said, I don't know, I have a halachic problem with that. And I was listening to myself, a halachic problem with what? The but you know, somebody has no asaga, what's mutter, what's asur, why it's mutter to make a, what, why it's mutter to do this and why it's asur to turn on lights on Shabbos. So he has a halachic problem with it. So you can think the things are asur and there's no reason in the world why they're asur. And you can think that things are mutter when there's no reason in the world why they're, why they should be mutter if you don't know. The first thing is, in order to have hakara sacheid, is to learn. Or if you don't learn, ask somebody who knows. Right? Am, what am I doing? Right. Here, I'll give you a list of things I do, and let me know if you see anything wrong with it or whatever. My Reshiver of Gifter was a Rav in Waterbury, Connecticut for many years before he came to Tel's Yeshiva. When they established the Yeshiva in America, they asked him to join them. So in Waterbury, Connecticut, he didn't have a minion of Shomer Shabbos people. It was a small kehila of Jews, mostly immigrants, and many of the people had, you know, really strayed from Yiddishkeit. There's kamat no Shomer Shabbos there. He used to sit and learn basically what his job was, to basically be their Shabbos, you know, take care of Levayas and Brisson or whatever, and he sat and learned. So in that kind of environment, you become very insensitive to what's wrong and what's right, right? Living in an environment like that. So his family told me that when a Meshulach would come, especially from Eretz Yisrael, and come to the community to collect tzedakah, so they would stay by him. And before they would leave, he would tell them, search through my house and tell me if you see anything here you think doesn't belong. Whatever it may be. Right? He says, I may have lost my sensitivity to what's right and what's wrong. And I don't realize that there's things here that don't belong. So I want you, you're an Eretz Yisrael Dikei Yid, and you're very sensitive. Right? If you see something in the house that you think it doesn't belong here, right, it's not right, let me know. So the first yisod is learn, so you'll know what's right and what's wrong, and don't become insensitive to it. In fact, some learn that that's what it means. The person says, Mara says, Haro yisurim bo'im alav, yifash pesh b'maisav, yimash mesh b'maisav. Person sees yisurim coming on him, so he should check his deeds to see if he's done anything that he could attribute these yisurim. Nothing happens just like this. So personally, a person should look to see what these yisurim can arouse him to do, can inspire him to do, to correct. So he should check and see, right, if he's having problems with his foot. Maybe he's used his foot the wrong way. Maybe he's gone places he shouldn't go, whatever. He had problems with his arms. Maybe he's used his arm the wrong way, whatever it may be. So the Gemara says, Pish Pesh Velo Matzah. What happens if you taka look through your deeds and you didn't find anything wrong? Then yitlein bevitl Torah. Then you should assume that the yisurim are coming because you didn't learn enough Torah. You didn't learn Torah when you should have been learning it. This basically, according to this, applies to men only, because women are not chayiv in Talmud Torah, so they're not over on bitl Torah. And that's one of the reasons why women have a greater guarantee to olam haba than men. Because they don't have that all-encompassing, looming aveira bittul Torah that men have. So, and that is an awesome aveira, bittul Torah. It's the worst aveira in quality, and obviously it can be a very quantity aveira, bittul Torah. So they ask on that, doesn't make sense, right? If you search through all your deeds and you couldn't find anything, why didn't you immediately find Bittul Torah, right? That's one of the biggest Averas. So if you were looking to see if you could find Averas, why didn't you find that one? So some say, because the idea is the following, that you were looking for an Avera that had to do with hands, because your hand hurts. And you couldn't find any Avera that has to do with your hand. So then, yitlim b'bitul Torah. Why? Because bitul Torah affects your whole body. It's a product of your whole body. So any part of your body you could attribute to bitul Torah. That's the simple, I think, the simple meaning. The Ramban says a different pshat completely. He says yifash space yamash mesh means you should look and try to find things that you did wrong. Not like the Mishul Shisharim learns. The Mishul Shisharim says yifash space is look for bad things, and yamash mesh means then look at the good things and see maybe you could have done them better. But the Ramban says no, yifash space and yamash mesh is on the bad things themselves. And the way I understand yifash space and yamash mesh, the Ramban doesn't say this, is there's two things to look for when you do things that are negative. One is the thing itself. You stole. Okay, so you stole. That's something negative. Then you mashmesh. Why did you steal? What brought you to steal? That you were jealous, that you don't respect other people's money, that you have too much of a taiva for money. There are causes for sins. So it's not enough just to know what you did wrong, but what midara did you have that brought you to do it? That's called your mashmesh b'maisa. And then the Ramban says, once you look to see if you can find anything that you did wrong, and you didn't find anything wrong, then yitlein bebitl Torah. Bitl Torah does not mean what I told you, not learning Torah when you should have. And therefore it applies to women too. It means then you should attribute it to something you didn't do right. Bitl Torah means not learning Torah, it means not doing a mitzvah in the Torah. Not doing something wrong, but not doing something right. So those are the general ways of explaining this Gemara. But I saw a chassidish pshat, nice pshat, that says the following. If you searched all your deeds and you couldn't find anything wrong, not positive or negative, you did everything right, nothing wrong, then it's not because you're a tzaddik. Because ain't adam tzaddik bar sashi yasitov. There's no person who's perfect. So then why do you think you're perfect? So yitlein bebitul Torah. You should attribute the fact that you didn't find any averas to the fact you didn't learn enough Torah. Had you learned more Torah, you would have found out that there's things that you don't even know exist that you're doing wrong. The only reason you think that you're okay is because you don't know what's right and what's wrong. And the truth is that is the case. People who have no idea what's it called, what mitzvahs are, what's right, what's wrong in this world. So their idea is, you're not allowed to murder, you're not allowed to, what's it called, you know, commit adultery, you can't steal, I never stole anything, I'm really a immoral person, right? I didn't murder anybody, so what could be wrong? But if you realize there's tarig mitzvahs, and there's millions of details or whatever, then you wouldn't feel so smug. So the first aspect of hakara sachet is learn. Because if you don't learn, then you have no idea if you're doing anything right or wrong, or missing something doing right. So that's the first, and that's a simple aspect. Simple aspect is to recognize what's right and what's wrong. That's called hakara sachet. Then there's a second aspect. You could have learned and know pilpulim on what's right and what's wrong, but then you can, what's it called, fool yourself and make excuses that it's not really wrong or it's not really right. And you justify it. You make excuses for it. And I have a famous word that I say all the time, that is what the Rambam means when he says, not really what he means, but it's a cute idea. The Rambam says that the Iker of Vidui on Yom Kippur is three words. If you say those three words, you Yotze Vidui on Yom Kippur. You don't have to say Al-Chayt, you don't have to say Oshamnu, all of that is extra. But if you said Avol Anachnu Chatanu, which we say, but we have sinned, then you Yotze. So the words will make sense. But we have sinned. Right, and we say it in the context of Ein anachnu tzadikim, lo ein anachnu azeponim. We're not mechutzofim, right? A brazen face, lo mar lefonecho tzadikim anachnu v'lo chotanu. Avol, but we have sinned. But in that context, the but makes sense. But the Rambam says, if you just say those three words, but we have sinned, that's good enough. Now the truth is, that's not what the Rambam means, and that's not even what it means in the paragraph I just told you. When we say slichas, whether it's on Yom Kippur or before Yom Kippur or on a Tainis, and we say, we are not so brazen to say tzadikim anachnu v'lo chatanu, avol anachnu v'lo chatanu, does not mean, but rather we have sinned. We're not tzadikim, but rather we have sinned. Doesn't mean that. Avol means verily, in truth. But in truth, we sinned. Right? So it makes sense. Avol anachnu chatanu means in truth I've sinned. That's the real meaning of avol. Avol ashemim anachnu does not mean but verily. Okay. However, I think you can understand it even if it has its regular meaning of but, and it still mamash says the same thing. The whole year we say vidui with those same three words in a different order. We say anachnu chatanu aval. I sinned, but now comes the big but I really didn't mean it, and I really wasn't the one who caused it, right? It was really my parents, right? They brought me up the wrong way, or blame it on the neighbors, or the devil made me do it, or what's it called? And really, I really had good kavana, and good things came from it. So really, it was not only not an aveira, it was really a mitzvah. After you finish giving excuses, all the buts, you come to not have saying vidui, but in the end, you've done mitzvahs. You've justified everything. You've given excuses for everything. And that's no vidui. So on Yom Kippur, you have to say those same three words, anachnu chatanu avol, but in the other order. Start with the avol, but. And after all the ifs, ands, and buts, you still remain with anachnu chatanu. Then you said vidui. And that really means, in truth, I sin. Because if you say anachnu chatanu, but then you have excuses, that doesn't mean, that means in truth, I really didn't sin. I'm saying it, right? And I'm being very nice about it, because in truth, it's really not true, because I really didn't sin, because I have all these excuses. So that's the vidui Yom Kippur, avol, anachnu chatanu. After all the avols, I think it's a cute word. The Maisa, you still have to come with anachnu chatanu. Yeah.
We say anachnu chatanu. We meant to have in mind ani.
The since that's the nusach of the vidui for a tzibur, that's when you always misvada for yourself and for others also. Now, how does it help to be mizvada for other people? That we'll get to, but not now. Right?
When we're actually saying,
you say, right, you mean, anachnu means the royal we. Right?
Uh-huh.
And didn't think of it before, but it could be, why do we say it then like that? The royal we, anachnu, not ani. Because even according to what I think, that I'm really special, and I deserve to be called in the plural, right? The royal we, still, with all that royal we, anachnu chatan, still sin. But the truth is that a person has to say vidui for his sins of previous generations, for the people around him, because a lot of the times you cause those sins, or you're affected by them. But that's for later. But there's a reason why we say berabim, as not private. However, if you say vidui only as an individual, not part of the tzibur, it's not Yom Kippur, it's not Slichas, it's not a Tainis, but you want to do tshuva on your own, then you could just say personal, ani, chatosi, ovisi, poshati, personal. Yeah.
From the previous point of the fashesh from myself.
And I want you to ask questions, because the purpose of this is not to give you 6 or 7 drashas from Tafshin Nun Vav. It's that in the drashas, there aren't any questions. Here we can make a shir and discuss it or whatever. I'll get something out of it also. Okay. Yeah.
Point of defashish from Isa. So someone gets a canker sore. So you can say 500 reasons why. So it's like you just pull them out of the hat. You could say I didn't talk nicely to people. I didn't make a bracha correctly. I said is 100 reasons why.
Right. I'm sure by you there's not 100 reasons, but you're no, nice. You mean by me? Yeah, and besides that, how can you be sure that that's the reason also? Okay, sometimes it's pretty obvious. I had one time in my life, pretty much, that was the case. Yeah, my ear. The number three. I was, what's it called? No, I was in a car and somebody, a nice person, was speaking really not nice things about some gadol. And I really was tired, and I didn't want to get into an argument, so I just nodded my head and listened. The next day I woke up with the worst earache I ever had in my life, in that ear, the one that he was talking to. And there was no other way of explaining it. It was like clear. There's no reason why she have an earache, and this was it. So that was pretty clear that Rebbe was trying to tell me something. I called the guy immediately, told him last night, for whatever reason, I wasn't mocha, and now I have a terrible earache, right? And you're the reason for it. And I want to call, want to tell you that you said something wrong, and I listened to something wrong, and you do tshuva, and I'll do tshuva, and maybe my earache will go away. And that taka went away. I don't know how long it took, but it went away. In any case, but normally it's very hard to say for sure, you know, this is the reason that something is coming. We can't say such a thing. Can't say it about ourselves, we can't say it about other people. Surely not about other people. But as we explained when we gave the shurim on the Holocaust, and we came to the reasons for the Holocaust, it's not that I could say this is why these tzaras happened to these people, or even to me. But once it happened, and I know that nothing's a coincidence, what can I take from it that makes sense to me that perhaps this is what the Rebbeinu was trying to tell me? That's the most you can do. But in that respect, okay, so if it's something that happened with your ear, so try to find something that has to do with that. But if you can't find any connection, right, then use it for something positive or whatever, even if it doesn't have a connection necessarily. But this is a sorus for something that you really knew that you had to correct and you didn't have the incentive. Use this as the incentive.
You might try and you might get totally wrong.
Right, 100%. Until a Navi comes and tells you, you can't know for sure. And so then what's the purpose? Because the purpose is not only to get you to do tshuva, what's it called, for that specific thing. It's the pain that you're going through is a kapara itself. All this extra is just an extra added benefit. But the real benefit is that the Rebbeinu Shalom is not necessarily punishing you, but he's giving you tzar, physical tzar, to compensate for the spiritual tzar that you caused yourself. So anyway, whatever's happening to your ear is going to make things better, because the tzar itself will help, especially if you're contrite and you say, look, I don't know why this is happening, but I know it must be because I did something wrong and I want to do tshuva. Fine, then the tzar that you're going through, the yisurim will be mechaper. Yisurim themselves are mechaper. But if you can pinpoint, that's even better. And if you can't pinpoint it, if you can at least get close, that's also better.
It could be for a mitzvah also.
What?
It could be for not doing a mitzvah.
Yeah. What's it called? Person get an arm ache because he missed tefillin one day, or his tongue can hurt because he didn't say Krishma on time.
But there are certain things, because I'll tell us that there are indications. Someone's bothered by a mosquito, someone's it's gaiva. Someone's bothered by a fly, so it's taiva. There are certain things that are indications that.
Yeah, but not those are things that. But every time a fly bothers a person, isn't because of that reason. For instance, Chazal say that why do Chassid Shalom little children die? Because a person's over on Nisr Nidorim or Nifl Peh or whatever. That doesn't mean if you see somebody, Rahman al-Itzlan, who had a little child die, you say, oh, I know what you were doing, right? You were speaking Nifl Peh, or you were over on a nether, Slavdavka. It doesn't mean that every time somebody's children die, it's because of a nether and Nifl Peh. But a nether and Nifl Peh could lead to that. So, therefore, every time a person has a fly around him, right, doesn't necessarily mean that he's done some avera. Could be for other reasons. If it bothers you a lot, yeah, Mustama. I mean, there's different madregas of how much a person is aware that every single thing that happens to him is min hashamayim. Nothing is a coincidence. So we say that, but, you know, we don't really feel it. So it's only the gigantic earthquakes that really make an impression on us. But if you're really on a right madrega, every little thing that's what's yisurim? What's what the Gemara says? Gemara says, what are yisurim? You see, roa yisurim boim alav, right? You see that you're suffering. So we think that means that you lost your job, you don't have any money for food for Shabbos, Rachmanu Litzlan, kids are sick, you're sick, you know, some kind of terrible illness, and that's yisurim boim alav. But the Gemara says not like that. And heichon tachlis shel yisurim, what does it mean yisurim b'ayim olavu? It could be something very subtle. You thought you had a coin in one pocket, and you put your hand into the pocket, and it wasn't there. You had to put your hand in the other pocket. That's called yisurim. Meaning, yisurim is anything that disrupts the normal flow of life. If everything would be right, then everything would be right. Then there'd be nothing to disrupt your life. You would be, what's it called, life would flow very, very well. Except, there's the exception, is yisurim shalava. It's possible that the Rebbe gives a person yisurim to disrupt his life, not because he did something wrong, but to make him do more right. To give him incentive to really think more than he would have had he not had this yisurim. But that almost doesn't exist for us. So, if your life would be spiritually flowing right, then it would be physically and materially flowing right. If it's not, then something is wrong. So that's yisurim. So that means that if anything is out of the flow of life, to the point where it's just a minute thing. A fly came. Why did the fly bother me? Like, why was my zocher, the fly should go somewhere else? So if you're on that madrega, you think about it, even those little things bother you. Ad kidei kach, that if you had to put your hand in the other pocket, it also bothered you. Yeah?
Sometimes, I've noticed sometimes that things which appear to me to be yisurim, because they're not pleasant, they're not how I wanted it to be, but when you come to the end and you can see the end of the story, you think, but that helped me to do such and such, which was a good thing.
100%. Yisurim doesn't... No yisurim are bad in the long run. They're all good. They have a good purpose in the end. But that same good purpose could have come in a much more comfortable way and not in an uncomfortable way. That's why on Rosh Hashanah we wish each other Lashana Tova Umasuka, a sweet and good year. Because it's not enough to say a good year. Because the worst tragedies is still a good year. Because ultimately it's all for the good. But it's not always sweet. So if it's not sweet, there's got to be a reason for it. Because if there wouldn't be a reason, it would be sweet. The Rambam didn't create a world for people to suffer or to be uncomfortable. So there must be a reason why you're uncomfortable and why you suffer and why it's not sweet. That's the idea. All right, last thing. The last Hakara Sachet is the hardest one. First one is learn, so you know. Okay, it's easy to learn and to identify a chet. Don't make excuses and justifications. That's the second thing. The third thing is be objective and don't distort things. Don't see things in a distorted way. Because if you let your bias and your desires rule you, then you never see things the way they really are, and you see averas to be mitzvahs and mitzvahs to be averas. It's not a question of justifying it. I know it's an avera, but I have this excuse, that excuse, and this justification, and I justify it away. Here we're not talking where I don't really know it's an avera, not because I didn't learn enough, because I'm so biased, I think it's a mitzvah. Based on that, the Baal Shem Tov learns a Gemara in Shabbos in an allegorical way. The Gemara says, Shochet mipnei ma mischayev. Right, so the simple meaning of the Gemara is that if you slaughter an animal on Shabbos, you're over one of the malachas. The question is, which malacha? So Rav and Shmuel argue. One says that you're over netilas neshama. You killed something. Killing something is the malacha. So you killed it. The other says, no. In addition to killing, because everybody agrees that if you kill an animal, even if you knock it over the head and, you know, whatever, you're over netilas neshama. But there's an extra added thing of shochet. And that is that when you slaughter an animal, the blood comes out, it makes the throat area look red, and makes the meat look more desirable. So by slaughtering it and making the blood come out and cover the meat, it's dying. Not only dying, D-I-E-I-N-G, but D-Y-E-I-N-G. Coloring. Soveya. That's the Gemara. So the Baal Shem Tov learned that Gemara allegorically the following way. The Shochet is a euphemism for the Yetzer Hara, the Satan, the Malach HaMavis. Right? He owes the same guy with three jobs. He first tries to get you to sin, right? He's the Yetzer Hara, right? Then he's the Satan. Then after you sin, he goes and complains that you sinned. And after that, he's the prosecutor that makes the Rabbanu Shem punish you ad kedekach, that he can take away your life. So it says in the future, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring the Yetzer Hara, the Satan, and shecht him in front of the tzaddikim and in front of the rishoyim. He's going to be finished off. So the Gemara asks, Shochet mimei ma'ischayev, why is God going to kill the Yetzer Hara and the Satan? What did he do wrong? He's a malach. He was created to make us try to make us sin. He's only doing his job. Why is the guy going to get punished? Right? I mean, the truth is, it's not a punishment. He's reached his purpose. Shechita is an animal that's reached its purpose. The purpose of the animal is to provide a service for human beings. One of those services is eating. So when you shecht an animal, you bring it to its tachlis. So the Yetzer Hara will be brought to its tachlis in the end, won't be needed anymore. That's the real meaning. But the Baal Shem Tov learned that Shochet means God is going to kill the Yetzer Hara. Why? What did he do wrong? Why does he deserve to be killed? Well, he just did his job. So one opinion says he did his job too good. He's supposed to try to make you sin, but not be so successful that Rachman Yitzchak only causes people to die. Netilas Neshama. Right, he gets your neshama taken away from you sometimes, and that is too good. He did too good of a job. The other opinion says no. For that, he wouldn't be punished. For what's it called, taking your neshama, because that's your choice, and he's supposed to try to make you, and he's supposed to do his job good. You know why he's chayev? Because it's soveya, because of coloring. Meaning, if the Yetzer Hara would come to you, okay, and say, look, it's now 7 o'clock, you have to get up for davening at 7:30. You have to be in davening at 7:30. And there's a mitzvah to daven, a mitzvah to get up to daven, but not in your case, because you're very tired. And if you get up and daven at 7:30, you're not going to be able to learn the whole first Seder, right? You'll be there, but your mind won't be there. So, therefore, I suggest, says the Yetzer Hara, that you sleep, get a good sleep. And chas v'shalom, you're not doing it because, what's it called, because you're doing an aveira, because learning is much more important than davening. So you'll sacrifice your davening for a real good learning for a seder. Okay? This is for the yeshiva part of the... the Yetzer Hara, if he would come to you and say, you know what, sleeping is really enjoyable, right? It's wrong to miss davening, but to heck with it. Get some good enjoyment of sleeping. Then you have an even chance. But it doesn't come like that. He colors the Aveira and makes it into a mitzvah. You're not doing an Aveira anymore. You're doing a tremendous mitzvah of preparing for Talmud Torah and sacrificing your tefillah for it. So the Yetzer Hara doesn't give you an even chance, choice. He's telling you it's a mitzvah. That's why he's chayiv. So you can be ignorant and not know you've done a chet. You can make excuses and justifications, or you plain can distort what you see and think that aveiras are mitzvahs and mitzvahs are aveiras. And people do it all the time. People are osa maisa zimri umavakish tchar kepinchas. They do what Zimri did, and they ask, you know, they expect to get rewarded like Pinchas. And they make the bad into good and the good into bad, and that's part of the sickness of the Yetzer Hara. Is when you're sick, good things taste bad, bitter things taste sweet, sweet things taste bitter, and when you're spiritually sick, the same thing happens. Right? You really can't judge things properly. So the first shlav of tshuva is hakaras hachet. Sounds real simple. Okay, recognize you're the sin. Now you can start doing tshuva. But it includes all the things that we said, and probably a lot more. But at least those three things: learning, not excusing and justifying, and seeing things in the right perspective. That's all called Hakaras HaChet, and without those three things, there's no way of doing tshuva. That is the foundation to be able to do tshuva, is called Hakaras HaChet. Okay, Mitzvah Hashem, we'll work on that this week, and next week we'll get to the second shlach.
Okay.
Yes.
Two questions. One is, if our vision is distorted, how are we supposed to really work on it? And
excellent question. The answer is, that's why you need two things. Asei l'charav and asei l'chachaver. Okay. You need friends, good friends, and you need leaders, the people to guide you. Okay. And I always find that probably in this area a friend is better than a rav, because a chaver is a rav with an extra letter, a ches. Right? Chaver is resh beis with a ches, and a rav is resh beis without the ches. Ches is always a symbol of something lamala min ateva, beyond nature. That's the number 8. A rav, that's what's it called? Somebody that's, you know, can give you guidance or whatever, so that's normal. But a friend sometimes can give you more guidance than a rav, because he knows you better, and you accept it easier from a friend, right? Because you know that they mean it for your good. And therefore, sometimes what a friend can accomplish in giving you a more unbiased view of what you're doing. That's the purpose of asking advice. That's why it says you're supposed to ask advice, even a greater person from a lesser person. Because the advice is not just information. If it's just information, if I know more than you, what am I going to ask you advice for? Right? If I know more about car motors than you know, if somebody have a noise in my car motor, I'm not going to go over to you and say, you have an idea what this noise may be? If I don't know, how do you know? You don't even know what you end the car the motor is. I'm not telling you, maybe you do. Right? So, but there is an idea of asking advice in somebody who knows less than you, because the purpose is not for information. It's to get an unbiased view of what you're doing, because they can see it in a more objective way than you can, because it doesn't make a difference to them. It's not their nisayon, it's yours. So you see it in a crooked, distorted way. They don't see it like that. So,
that's Rabbeinu Yonah.
What?
Rabbeinu Yonah says that.
Yeah. So therefore, that's the way to do it. The way is by asking other people, by accepting guidance from people who are not subjective and not biased because of your bias, and ask them, how do you see this, right? Maybe different than I see it. And a lot of times, I mean, you can see for yourself. Sometimes you see something, you go to ask somebody else, and they see it completely differently. And after you're out of the nisayon, you realize that they're right. And sometimes people come to you, and you know that what they're saying is totally distorted. Yet when you had the same problem, you saw it the way they saw it. Now you see it objectively. Sometimes that's what happens. The Rebbeinu Shlomo makes people come to you for advice on things that you, when you had the thing, saw it just the way they are. But now you see clearly that they're completely off the wall. They see it completely distorted. But that's one way, at least. It's an Iker way of knowing if you're seeing things properly or not. Ask advice from other people, friends, and mentors.
I have one more question. I think I've asked this in the past, but I don't remember. I feel every year the same thing. When we wanted to do tshuva for Yom Kippur and you want to have a clean slate, and there's so many things to work on, it seems completely overwhelming to think, I'm going to be perfect now, I'm going to fix everything, and come to Yom Kippur. If I want to be also honest, it seems like I can't possibly do all the things that a whole year I didn't manage.
Okay, that's a good question. Hold off. We'll get to it as we go through the shlovim of tshuva. Right? How comprehensive the tshuva has to be to, right? Can you talk about Yom Kippur, work on every single thing you ever did wrong?